So we will, I want to share with you today an idea by Rabbi Sacks on this week's Parsha. So the entire process of the building of the Mishkan builds up to this moment. The real question is, and we'll see it again in Parsha Shmini, the real question is, will Hashem actually be Shore Hishchina upon the Jewish people? And if he is, then like, it worked. So we know, of course, that it doesn't work exactly perfectly in Shmini, and Aaron has like a moment where he's like, oh my gosh, this might not actually work, and then what? But that said, we actually have a little bit of a heads up here at the end of Pekudei that it does work. The Mishkan actually does have Hashem Shechina there, and it's the perfect close for Sefer HaGeula. This is Maftir of Sefer Shmot. Shmot is Sefer HaGeula. Whatever happened at Yetzias Mitzrayim, that the Jewish people were redeemed, this is the redemption, not physically, but the spiritual redemption of the Jewish people. I guess on some level, Matan Torah is... Surly, I you're muted.
Yeah, on purpose.
Oh, sorry. I thought you were... I apologize. I thought you were saying something. Okay. Okay. So here we go. So whatever Yitzias Mitzrayim was, the building of the Mishkan is actually the next piece of that. So here we go. Pasuk Lamed Dalet. Ve'yichas hananet Oel Moed u'kvod Hashem maleat haMishkan. So the cloud covered the Oel Moed, and the glory of God filled the Mishkan. Lo yachol Moshe lavol Oel Moed. And Moshe could actually not come into the Ol Moed when God's presence was there, because God's presence, whatever that means, filled up the entire Mishkan. We're not going to spend much time trying to understand what that means. I'm not sure that I understand really what that means, but somehow when God was there, Moshe was not able to come into the Mishkan. But when the Anan, when the cloud would lift up from on top of the Mishkan, all the Jews would travel b'chol masehem, on all of their travels. Okay, makes sense. We know already from Bishalach that when the cloud travels, the Jewish people travel. That's what happens. V'im lo yale hanan, v'lo yisu ad yom he'aloto. But if the cloud would not go up, then they would not travel until the day that it went up. Okay. Makes sense. Ki anan Hashem al Mishkan yomam v'eish tia laila bo leinei kol beit Yisrael b'chol masehem. Any balei kriya will know that those are the actual last words of Sefer Shmot b'chol masehem. Right? Then chazak chazak v'nit chazek. So what happens? Because the anan Hashem was on the Mishkan by day and by night, and then the fire at night. Leinei kol beit Yisrael, to the eyes of all the Jewish people, b'chol masehem, in all of their travels. Now, there is a problem with this. First off, when they're traveling, what does not exist?
Mishkan.
The Mishkan. So it's very hard to understand. What does it mean? Ki anan Hashem al Mishkan, right? Skip. Leinei kol beit Yisrael, b'chol masehem. That the cloud of God was on the Mishkan, when they were traveling. It's not true. There was no Mishkan for the cloud to be on top of. Additionally, the other problem is that the when they traveled, the cloud was not on top of them. We know that the cloud traveled ahead of them. We know that from Parshas Balosra, that Vayibin Tzoharom, Vayomer Moshe, Kum Hashem, we're told there that when they traveled, the cloud would go and clear ahead of them the road so that the road was flat. So what exactly is this saying? The first pasuk makes sense. When the Anan was on the Mishkan, when the Anan went from on top of the Mishkan, the Jewish people would travel. But what does it mean that it was always there, b'chol masehem, in all of their travels? So that's really the only question I want to try to figure out tonight. Okay, any other questions on these psukim before we look at Rashi? Okay, so Rashi's bothered by this. the fact that it says B'chol Ma'aseihem twice, and yet it seems to be that the second one doesn't really make 100% sense in terms of to say that it was there when they were traveling. So Rashi says, L'einecho Beit Yisrael B'chol Ma'aseihem, B'chol Ma'asa Shayu Nosim, Haya Hanan Shochein B'mkom Asher Yachnu Sham. So he says, in every trap, for every place that they went, B'chol Masa, so Rashi actually changes it not to be in all of their travels, but in every stop that they traveled to, the Anan, the cloud, would stay there while they camped there. And he says, Mekom Chanayatan Afhu Karui Masa, that even the place that they camped in was considered a place that they traveled. Was considered a travel of theirs. V'chein v'yelech l'masav, like we see by Avraham in Parshas Lech Lecha, that he went along his way. V'chein eila masay, and similarly in masay, where it lists all of the places that they traveled to. L'fishem mekom achanaya, chazu v'nasu, l'kach nikru, kulam masaot. Because the place that they would travel to, the place that they camped in, they would actually go and travel from as well, and that's why everything was called a camp. Okay, so Rashi knows that you can't read this pasuk literally. If you were to say b'chol ma'aseihem means in all their travels, like we originally translated it, the pasuk doesn't make any sense. So Rashi says it really means in all of their traveling destinations. By adding in that word, it makes sense. Yeah, when they traveled, pasuk lamed vav, the cloud moved. And when they arrived at their destination, the cloud was on top of them, on top of the Mishkan. Okay, so that is the first possible answer. Second possible answer is an answer by the Nitziv, the Emek Davar, in his book HaEmek Davar, and he says the following. He says B'chol Ma'aseihem, B'chol Ma'aso Bein Shaya B'ratzon Hashem Bein Shu B'zaf Kemo La'achar Ma'aseh Meraglim. All the stops that they went to, whether it was Beratzon Hashem, or whether it was Bezaaf, whether it was in anger, like all the stops after the Meraglim, Mikal Makom Lo Nishtaneh Esek Hamud Shayat Tamid. The cloud business was always the same. Now, I'm not sure exactly how, I guess what you would have to say is that the Nitziv is kind of bothered by why it says B'chol Ma'aseihem twice, and he'll say that the reason for twice is one of them is talking about the good places, the places that they went to before Chet HaMeraglim, when God was still happy with them. The other one was the ones that were after Chet HaMeraglim, and yet despite the fact that God was not happy afterwards, still Hashem is always with us. And I guess what you would have to say is that the Nitziv's message is that the Nechama is that no matter what we do, Hashem is with us. The Gemara Megillah says that when we go into Galus, Hashem goes in with us. Okay? So
it still doesn't make sense that it has to be repeated. If it says it once, I imagine that it's not lying the first time. That always means always.
Right, yeah. So again, like either you're going to say that
it's words, you know, it doesn't add extra words that were already said. No reason.
Right. So I guess you'd have to say that either the Nitziv is going to say it's like Alpi Drush, like it's a nice lesson, or he's going to say that like we if it only said B'chol Ma'aseihem once, I would only know that it was like in the prior to Chet HaMeraglim, only in the good places. The fact that it says it twice, it's then kolel all of the places. But yeah, Mati, it's a good point. I think Rashi definitely... I don't say this often in the Chabura, but I think Rashi definitely does a better job, I think, answering up what to do with these psukim than the Nitziv does.
Although as soon as you read Rashi, I had this like, this gut feeling that Ramban would look at it and say, I don't think so.
Right, so it's interesting. I didn't look in a Chumash. I only looked in Sfaria, but there's not a lot said on this pasuk. So, yeah, I have to go, like, from Rashi. There were not that many until you got to the Nitziv, which is much further down the list. Okay, fine. So that's two answers. The Yalkut Yehuda, I have no idea who he is, but he's quoted by Iturei Toro in my favorite Svarim, and he says like this, Makom chanayetam af hu karui masa. He quotes Rashi, right? We know this. The place, which, if you want to understand Rashi a little bit, take a look at the source right to the left. It's Robert Frost. The woods are lovely, dark, and deep, but I have promises to keep and miles to go before I sleep. Rabbi Sachs says that the message of Robert Frost is basically Rashi, and that's it's all about the journey. It has nothing to do when you're so far from your destination, then every stop along the way is just another. Even though it's a quasi destination, the final destination is what matters. And so Rashi's saying it's all along the way, everything counts. And then back to Yalkut, Yehuda, what does he say? Gam shat shel mar ta ayin yoshem bnei Yisrael lefamim shketim v'shalvim b'makom echad v'zen yireh k'makom chanayetam. He says, what happens? Sometimes we have a place that the Jewish people are sitting. Everything seems wonderful. They're happy. It's quiet. Nobody's bothering them. It feels like it's a makom chanayetam. It feels like the Jewish people are in a place of, like, where they're living. Af hu karui masa. Even then, it's called a masa. Kolomar af azaleinu ledato ledat shezo rak tachana zmanit v'omdim lefnei nesia chadasha nedida chadasha. The Yalkut Yehuda points out, it's not far off from the Nitziv, even though he has a different pshat, but it's also al pidrush, he's coming to the same point, to say that in the end, when we, even if we're in a peaceful, quiet place, so long as we're in exile, where it's just another stop along the way, and eventually there's going to be a new journey to go, another nedida chadasha, nedida I think is like to rock, right? There'll be a new something that will throw us off. So what the Yalkut Yehuda is saying is that the message here of b'chol maseyam, which again seems very far from the pshat of the psukim, is that no matter where we find ourselves, no matter what's going on, we should understand that as long as we're on the journey, which is not being living in Eretz Yisrael with the Geula Shleima, so we're always going to be b'chol maseyam. Every place, even a place that we think is a chanaya, is really a masa. Okay? So that's another answer. Once again, I think Rashi is the answer that's going to be the easiest, but perhaps I just thought about this. Maybe what the Nitziv and the Yalkut Yehuda really are doing is they're not answering the question of why it says B'chol Maaseihem twice and why the Mishkan is moving, but rather they're explaining a little bit deeper what Rashi means when he says Mekom Chanayatam Afu Karoi Masa. They're saying that what does Rashi mean when he says every place along the way is a journey? According to the Nitziv, it means that no matter what kind of journey we find ourselves in, when we're in a good place vis-a-vis God, a bad place vis-a-vis God, it's still a journey with the Anan Hashem, with the protection of God. And perhaps the Yalkut Yehuda is saying a little bit differently. He's saying that what? That when you're traveling, even in a quiet place, and even when everything is tranquil and wonderful, understand that that's the very nature of Galus, is that it's not going to be everlasting. Okay, so let's take a look at the next source, Perakei Pasuk Aleph. Let's try to understand what is the chiddush of God introducing the idea of Mishkan into the world. V'achar ba'u Moshe v'Aaron v'yomru paro ko'amar Hashem Elokei Yisrael shalach et mi v'achogu li b'midbar. So Moshe and Aaron come, and they speak to Paro, and they say, so says God of the Jewish people, let my people go, so that they could, or send my people out, so they could make a feast for me in the desert. All right, it's one of the first times, if not the first time, I think it's the first time, that Moshe and Aaron say, God, to Paro, let my people go. Pasuk Bet. Vayomer Paro, mi Hashem asher eshma bekolo. So Paro says, who is God that I should listen to him to send the Jewish people out? I don't know God, and the Jewish people I won't send out. They say, so what do they say? The God of the Jews has called to us and said that the Jewish people should go on a 3-day journey and bring a korban to God. Otherwise, we might be smitten by a pestilence or by sword. Anybody know what happens in the next pasuk? I'm just going to quickly grab a chumash to check. But what does Paro say? Because it seems as though whatever Paro's answer in pasuk bet is, Moshe's answer in pasuk gimel does not seem to help that at all. So pasuk dalid. So Paro says, just leave them alone. Right? Why are you bothering them? And then Pasuk Hey is Paro Matam. There's a lot of workers. I don't want you stopping them from their work. So the problem is that Moshe's answer in Pasuk Gimel doesn't seem to answer Paro's concern in Pasuk Bet, and Paro's answer in Pasuk Dalet and Hey doesn't seem to address or be consistent with his answer in Miyashem Esher Shema Bekolo L'Shalach Yisrael V'Yedati Et Hashem V'Gam Yisrael Lo Shaleach. So what is Paro really saying? So anybody want to take a try at it? What's Paro's answer to Pasuk Aleph?
What's the answer again?
So his answer is Miyashem Asher Shema Bekolo L'Shalach Et Yisrael Lo Yodati Hashem Gam Nisol Lo Shaleach. Right? How does that answer? So says God. Let the Jewish people go. And how does Moshe's answer then answer that by saying, if we don't go, we might be killed? Is anybody at least bothered by the fact that it just seems to be like the logic doesn't seem to flow well?
Well, I mean, Paro's answer seems reasonable from someone who thinks he himself is half a god.
Right, meaning if you just said Pasuk Aleph and Bet Shmuel, I think the story works, right?
Yeah.
God said...
Right, that was question one.
Right, Moshe and Aaron say, let my people go. Because God said that. And Paro's answer is, well, I don't know who God is. Right, so if I don't know who God is, then I don't care. So Moshe's answer is, well, it's the God of the Jews. And if you don't let them go, he might kill the Jews. So then Paro says, well, let the Jewish people are busy. You just go do your thing. Like, how does that answer it?
Is if the Jews don't go, or if they go to the Midbar but don't give
Korban.
Right, so I think Rashi says that actually what he's really doing is he's saying it's maybe you're going to get it, but he doesn't want to say it's Kabbalah Malchus, so instead of saying it to Paro, he says it about the Jewish people, right?
It's not just Lashon Nekiyah. I mean, they said that you have to, like, it makes a big difference if he's saying we're going to die or you're going to die.
Right, yeah, but it's Pen Yifka Einu, but there we might get smitten. And then he says, oh, yeah, really, it means, you know, you, Paro. So it seems to be, it's a very hard read what the logic is. Now, again, you could argue that the logic is that what's Paro's answer in Dalet and Hey? You know, you're saying that they have to go for 3 days and worship God. Otherwise, something bad might happen to them. Well, let me tell you, there are a lot of Jews. And if I send them, you know what that's going to do to my economy? If the economy comes to a grinding halt for 3 days, that's not going to work either, right? So you could read it like that. So it's interesting. Rabbi Sacks says something beautiful. He says that in Pasuk Bet, Paro's not saying Mi Hashem Asher Shema Bekolo, that I don't believe in God. He believed in a lot of gods, so there was no problem in believing in yet another god. But what he was saying is that we Egyptians have a very different way of viewing God than you do. We view God as the God of a certain physical area or space. So what does that mean? It means that the Egyptians believed in the God of the sun that lived in Egypt. They built big temples to the God of the sun in Egypt. And their neighbors believed in different gods. And their neighbors built their own houses of worship which were wherever, in their place. And every single person built their own temples to their own gods in their own place. So what the Egyptians and all the other nations at the time believed in was that everybody believed that God was a local god. And your god was consistent with the area you lived. So if you lived in a place that needed sun and rain, you were going to, or sun in the Nile, you were going to believe in the sun in the Nile as God. And if you lived in a place that, I don't know, that had a lot of rain, you might believe, like in Israel, like the right, the Canaanim and the Plishtim believed in Baal. Why? Because Baal was the god of rain that provided sustenance through the sky. You believed in a god that worked with what your needs were. What the Jewish people were doing, which was incredibly unique, although not new, because it went back to the times of Adam and Chava in the beginning of creation, is they believe that God is not confined to a place, but rather God has no place. And therefore, the Mishkan is symbolic of this. Instead of building a massive temple like all the other nations, what did the Jewish people do? They built a Mishkan that was transportable. It moved with them. So to say that just as God has no place, his house has no place. And so that's what Moshe and Paro are arguing about. Paro says, I believe that there might be a God, but why should I listen to him here? Lo yadati ad Hashem, right? We don't hold by this God. We don't know of this God, and therefore I won't send it. And so what Moshe is saying is, no, this God actually does have the ability to take hold of people in this place, even though it's not his place. And then Paro goes off and says, well, you know what, Moshe, why don't you do your own thing? I don't have time for this. I'm not losing my people over the possibility that maybe God will come here. That's how Rabbi Sachs reads the Psukim. How does that tie in? It ties in beautifully to B'chol Maseihem, that the same way that we travel, God travels, and the Mishkan travels. So where do we see this idea from a practical standpoint? So there's two halachic places we see this. We end at the Seder itself, right? We twice say this. We more clearly at the beginning, where we say l'shata ha'cha, for this year we're here. L'shana haba be'arad Yisrael, is that we accept the fact that we are transient, and we hope that ultimately we'll make the final destination as a people to Eretz Yisrael. That's the first place. The second place is in Yoredeya. It is a halacha that if you buy a new house from a non-Jew, you're familiar with. I remember, I don't know, 16 years ago, 15 plus years ago, when we bought in West Hempstead. So the people we bought from were certainly not Jewish people. And this is the halacha. Socher bayit b'chutz la'aretz, ahadar b'pundak b'aretz Yisrael, pater m'mezuzah shloshim yom. If you buy a house in Chutz Laretz, or if you rent a house in Chutz Laretz, either way, or if you're like in a hotel in Israel, you're pater from mezuzah for 30 days. But if you're renting or buying in Israel, you're chayiv mezuzah right away, mishum yishuv Eretz Yisrael, because of yishuv Eretz Yisrael. So what exactly does this mean? So Rabbi Sachs explains the Yoredeya to say the following. He says that when you live in Chutz La'aretz, because it's like we said, like Rashi said, Makom Chanayetam Afu Karui Masa, that even where we are is simply just another stop along the way, so it's not considered permanent. So for the first 30 days, you don't have you don't have to put a mezuzah up. But in Eretz Yisrael, which is our homeland, automatically we put up a mezuzah right away, because the second you move in, you're considered a yishuv, a person that's living there. That's as Rabbi Sachs is the two practical places that we see this. He ends with one last piece. He says, "Asita badei atzei shitim v'tzipita otam zahav." You have to make the aron, and the aron has poles, and the poles are covered in gold. And then there are badim, there are poles that go through the tabaot, these rings that are on the corners of the Aron to carry the Aron with them. But Tabot Aron Yu Abadim Lo Yasur Mimenu. And the poles have to stay in there forever. So Rav Shimshon Rufal Hirsch says, I don't understand. Why does that make any sense? Why do you have to put that on the? Why do you have to put the poles in the Aron? Especially once we got to the Mikdash, or even when the Mishkan got to Eretz Yisrael and wasn't moving anymore. What was the purpose of having the poles be there forever? So he says it's to send the message to Klal Yisrael that the Torah is transportable and it's not limited to one place. I'll end with a beautiful idea. So Emil Fackenhammer was survivor who was a brilliant scholar. So he offers the following. He said that he was a German Jew living in Germany, and his parents had a picture up on their wall which was so out of the ordinary for them. They did not, suffer from pogroms and things like that until the Holocaust. But they had a picture on their wall of Jews leaving an area after a pogrom. And they were holding whatever they had as they were leaving the town. And he said that if you thought about it, you would assume that the Jewish people would be, at least, from the eyes of the anti-Semites, they would be leaving, carrying their bags of gold and riches. He said, but what do you have? You have the picture of them carrying the Sifrei Torah. That's what all the people were doing. They were carrying the Sifrei Torah of the land. He says, that's the greatest treasure. And that's what carries the Jewish people from one place to another, is that they go, their stuff doesn't go with them. But just like the Aron has the Badim that never leave from there, so too it is that the Jewish people have a Torah that travels with them. That's as of Hirsch is the message. And where do we get that from? We don't only get it from B'chol Maaseihem, but we actually get it from the first of our forefathers, Avram. Lech lecha mi'artzecha m'latcha b'yit avicha al artz ha'shareka. Avram is a person that goes, but what he takes with him is his connection to God through the Torah. I'll end, really, with one last story. So the Dalai Lama, when he realized in the 1990s, that he was not coming back home anytime soon. This was apparently after he was already in exile for close to 50 years, but it became clear to him that he was not coming home anytime soon. He needed to speak to someone to try to figure out how he could make it that his religion could survive not being in their land. And he had no question that the only people to speak to were a group of Jews. So he called a bunch of rabbis and said to them, I want to know what your secret ingredient is to last so long. Now again, it doesn't have to be that they saw eye to eye on spirituality and religion, but the fact that the Dalai Lama even recognized that the people to speak to, if you want to know how to make it when you're going to be in exile for a long time and landless, was the Jewish people. But to us, it's not really a question. We know it's the Torah that sustains us. It's the Torah that keeps us going as we go in exile from one land to the next. And in Yirtzeh Hashem, we should be zoche one day soon to see the Torah find itself permanently with all the Jews living in Eretz Yisrael.